Nintendo has done it. They have finally revealed the Nintendo Switch. That's their new system, formerly known as Nintendo NX. Welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode number 67, The New Challengers. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
How about that name?
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about this week in the world of Nintendo. As I said, they have announced the Switch, the NX. That's going to be our big topic, obviously. We're going to have a bunch of other game impressions and news to talk about as well. But let's not wait. Let's just get into our big topic right away for our first thing on this show, and that is the Nintendo Switch. Before we start talking about the name and the other things, you know, in brief, it is indeed a portable console hybrid. It indeed does have detachable controllers that can be reconfigured in some manner. It indeed does use little tiny cartridges. And it is powered by NVIDIA, features a custom Tegra processor, and it is indeed still coming out in March. And apparently it's region-free also, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great news, yeah.
But as for the name, it's all right. I don't think it's a brilliant name. I don't think it's horrible. It's okay. It's kind of weird that it's a Switch, which is, you know, a real thing, unlike a Wii or a GameCube or a Nintendo Entertainment System. That's a little bit odd.
Yeah.
Or a 3DS for that matter. But on the other hand, you know, it's not being called the Switch or something like that. It's not being called the...
Yeah, we dodged a bullet there, I think.
Not called the Wii 3 or anything like that. So do you like it? Do you like the name?
I actually do. When I first read, I was like, you know, I knew they were going to change it away from the code name, but... Mm-hmm. You know, like, man, the Revolution would have been such a nice name for that system, the Wii. And I think I'm okay with the Switch. I'm okay with it, although it makes me think of the Switch.
You're okay that they switched to Switch.
That's right. I expected it. I was hoping it wasn't going to be like Wii Next or something equally stupid, right, like the new Galaxy-style new Nintendo 3DS. I think... dodged a bullet, and I like the name, but it does make me think of the Switch Palaces from Super Mario
from
World.
Super Mario? Well, that's a good thing, maybe.
Yeah.
That's what makes it, or the P-Switch or something
or
like that.
Or the P-Switch. So Switch, I'm guessing it's got the similar name in Japanese.
Yeah, it appears to be the same in Japanese. They got the same exact video that we got this morning.
Okay.
So it doesn't appear to be any different.
Their video was full of white people playing basketball?
Yes, it was. It was the exact same video, exact same thing. As far as it being the system name goes, I'm not really sold on it, but from like a marketing perspective, I can really understand it. Like, you know, we're switching it up. We're being something different. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being able to, you know, switch around the configuration makes sense. And just telling people, yes, this is something new and different. And of course, they'll be saying, you know, make the Switch to Nintendo. Yeah. Don't be playing that old stuff.
I really like the logo they designed for the thing.
Yeah, the logo's not bad. But, you know, I think about NX and I suddenly think, man, NX actually would have been a perfect name because, you know, the X, the cross, the crossover, the cross between a handheld system and a console system, it really makes me think that the X kind of is perfect, you know, and so that NX name, the Nintendo for the N and the X for the crossover hybridness of it really kind of makes that, you know, would have been great. But, you know, I'm sure Switch will be fine in the long run. But, you know, beyond that, what about everything else? Well, I guess the Switch is actually just that, you know, this tablet-like thing. And it either goes into the Nintendo Switch dock and it becomes the console.
Yep.
And then you've got these Joy-Con controllers. There's the left side controller and the right side controller. And each one has an analog stick and four face buttons and two shoulder buttons. And then these two other tiny little additional buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And you can either use them individually. So you're just using like one of these things. So it's kind of like an awkward Super Nintendo controller. Or you can take both of them and attach it to what they are calling the grip. And so then it's basically a full-fledged, you know, fully sized controller.
Yeah.
Or you can then, you know, take off the these Joy-Con controllers and you slap it on to the tablet, the Nintendo Switch itself, and then you can take it out of the dock and you can take it on the run and you can go and just play the exact same games wherever you want to go.
Yeah, I feel like calling it a tablet is a misnomer just because it doesn't look like it has any touch functionality whatsoever. So
I think they're just not telling us about it yet. I think it will. And I mean, they have shown it as just being, you know, used as a standalone sort of monitor. And, you know, when you have it as just a monitor, you can still play it with the controllers, even though they're not attached to the unit. There is also a separate pro controller that you can use, and you can use it either when it's hooked up to the TV or when it's just the screen being used by itself. So,
and it's got the D-pad.
Yes, that's, yeah, I was going to say that. There's no D-pad on the Joy-Con controllers. That's kind of crazy because that was kind of one of the innovations that put the NES on the map back in the day. And I was like, oh man, it's kind of a shame that there's no D-pad. There's just these arrow buttons on the left-handed Joy-Con.
Yeah, though if Virtual Console is going to be a part of this thing, I can't imagine they wouldn't have an accessory left side controller that has the D-pad.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. But then there's also the Pro controller.
I mean, the four face buttons could function like a D-pad, but it'd be the worst D-pad, so.
I guess, but playing with just the stick, you know, probably would be fine as well. It wouldn't be perfect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's probably going to be some sort of classic controller add-on, if not just, you know, a whole separate classic controller, since it obviously does have the capability to use other controllers besides just the Joy-Con controllers. So, yeah, it's kind of doing a lot of the stuff that we expected. You know, on the one hand, it's pretty cool that you'll be able to take the exact same games on the go that you're playing on your TV. I know a lot of people are going to be really happy about that, that you can, you know, you don't have to stop playing Breath of the Wild. You can just, you know, put your controllers onto the side of the unit and take it out, and you, suddenly you're playing this full-fledged epic Zelda adventure on the bus or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty impressive. To go along with that, it means that, yes, it really is going to free up a lot of Nintendo's internal resources so they aren't dividing their attention and their development teams between two separate systems. Now, every game that comes out, you'll be able to play. It's not going to matter if you own a 3DS or Wii U. You know, everything's going to be playable on this one system, on the Switch. That's really cool.
Yeah, though I would say I don't think they're going to ditch the handheld market the way it seems like you're saying. I still think there's room for a designated handheld. I don't think,
really?
I don't think the price point on this thing is going to convince a lot of parents to buy, you know, this thing as a portable console for their kid. I still see space for a 3DS successor. And I'm not talking about a new 3DS.
I suppose there could be. I could see that, but it certainly doesn't seem that Nintendo is going that way. I mean, the 3DS has been on the market for more than 5 years now, and I think if they were going to have a next-generation successor to the 3DS, then we would have already seen it by now. I mean, the 3DS is kind of showing its age. It's ready to be replaced by a newer, more modern system, and I think that newer, more modern system is the Nintendo Switch. I agree there probably would be room for it, you know, hypothetically speaking, but I feel like Nintendo doesn't have the bandwidth to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of what this thing is, I don't see any real necessity for them to do it either. So I think that while 3DS will continue on for a while, eventually it will just give way to the Switch being their de facto handheld system. You know, maybe in a year or two from now, if not sooner.
Wow.
That's what I'm feeling.
Wow. That's big.
My concern is with, like, the pricing of the games and the development cost of the games. And so if every developer out there is suddenly thinking, oh, well, this is an HD system, it you know, runs HD games, whether you're on the TV or you're on the go, and so we have to take advantage of that, that could be problematic. If it's still easy enough and, you know, developers have the right thought process to still sort of make, you know, handheld style experiences for the Switch, then, you know, I think things are going to be okay. You know, there is that initial, you know, price point, like you said, you know, buying into this thing, you know, there is that as sort of a barrier to entry. If you just want to have a handheld system, that might be tough to swallow if it's like $250 or $300 or something.
Yep, yep.
But after you have that, then there's the games. And I think we've talked about stuff like this before, where hopefully we're still getting games that are priced at like, oh, here's the triple A style console experience, and here's the handheld experience that might be at a lower price point. Because I still want to be able to play and get experiences like Professor Layton or Ace Attorney or Mario and Luigi or Picross 3D or Box Boy or Bravely Default that are definitely not using all the resources of an HD console, but are still awesome, fantastic experiences if you're on the go. And so as long as they're able to, you know, make games of that kind of quality and price it accordingly, then I think we don't have anything to worry about.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm just wondering, is there going to be room for a, you know, a $40 Layton game?
Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so.
And are you going to play a $40 Layton game on a possibly $400 video game system?
Well, just as much as you're playing $2 or $10 or often free experiences on a $700 tablet.
You got me there. You got me there.
I think it's comparable to that. And hopefully it will have this whole, you know, diverse range of experiences, just like you get on, your iPad, where some of the times you're getting, very rarely on those systems are you getting like a AAA full price game. But hopefully on this, you'll be able to get those. You'll be able to get like a handheld quality, medium price point. And then you'll also have, you know, the lower price points, things that are shorter, that are download only, that are indie games, and of course the whole virtual console, you know, where that comes in.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll be able to have this whole wide range of experiences ranging from, you know, the AAA stuff that takes advantage of, you know, being full HD and, you know, 60 frames per second, et cetera, going all the way down to being able to play your favorite games from the 80s and, you know, super simple indie stuff. Hopefully not, you know, cheap garbage indie stuff like, Crappy Bird or something that. But I think there should be room for all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
What else did you think when you found out about the system?
I wanted a surprise out of this and I didn't really get a big surprise.
This is true.
I think the neatest thing that came out of that video was, one, the third-party support, and two, being able to detach those controllers and use them apart from the screen and hand one of those to your friend, and now you can play a two-player game together. To be able to do that on a handheld console is pretty neat.
Yeah, I guess I did expect that kind of when it was in its console form, but I wasn't, didn't really think it would be that way when it's just a standalone unit. When you're just looking at the screen, you flip up that stand and you put it down there, and it's like, oh, hey, we can still do a two-player split-screen game. When they were showing that with Mario Kart, that was pretty cool. There really hasn't been much of an opportunity to do anything like that.
Yeah. And it's funny, we're still not sure of the specs. We know that it's running that NVIDIA Tegra processor, of custom one. I'm guessing it's based on the newest Tegra processor. So are we expecting current gen performance out of this thing? I feel like it's going to pretty much be Wii U performance, and I'm thinking that screen is only going to get 720p. It's Nintendo. They make toys, and I don't see that screen being any higher than 720p. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to say. I hadn't really given it too much thought. I suppose it's fairly possible, possibly even likely, that it's only 720p. Do think it's going to be, you know, somewhat more powerful than Wii U. And, you know, I'm glad it's not going backwards. I'm glad that from the games they showed, from the images they presented, I was glad to see, it doesn't seem like it's super underpowered. It doesn't, you know, the games are not ugly looking. It seems graphically competent, but we really don't know the specifics. We don't know. We don't know the stats. We don't know, you know, what it's really going to be like. We don't know, you know, a lot of the other things like, you know, memory and so on and so forth that could really affect how it all plays out.
Mm-hmm. And with the size of that dock makes me think it's not just for charging, it's not just for pushing the video signal to the television. It looks like it could also have a separate graphics processor.
Huh.
Because, you know, your portable is, you know, that Tegra processor, if you only have it pushing 720p graphics to a screen, it's more than capable. I mean, you could probably make a beautiful looking game, even though it's only 720p, mm-hmm. and have it play really smoothly with tons of beautiful textures and blah, blah, blah on a handheld portable device. But once you dock it, I feel like a second GPU would take over or assist to creating a 1080p 60 FPS experience. Now, people still talking 4K gaming out of this thing, unless there's some sort of magic inside that thing, there's no way it's going to do it without some sort of separate processor outside of the device.
That was an early rumor that was supposed to have 4K, but it's kind of looking like that's probably not going to be the case. I guess we'll just have to see on that.
Yeah.
If you're right about that, I certainly wouldn't mind. That would be a cool reason to decide to play your games at home rather than just playing them on the portable screen.
I don't think the handheld experience is going to be gimped in some way, but it looks like, I mean, I couldn't tell from the video, but it looks like the handheld is running at a lower frame rate than the big screen experience. So that's a thing. Yeah. We'll have to see, but it's Nintendo. They're making a profit on these things. They're not selling them at a loss like Sony and Microsoft can. So don't expect 4K gaming out of that, and don't expect a beautiful OLED screen on the thing. I mean, look at the Wii U gamepad and imagine just a very slight bump up from that. And that's probably what you're going to get. So it looks like an iPad screen. I guarantee you it's not going to look like an iPad screen in your hands. Listen, I'm going to love these games on this system, no matter what the resolution of that display is. But I definitely want to temper some of the enthusiasm I'm seeing online with, oh my gosh, it's the dream system iPad graphics with the perfect controller. But we will see.
I'm just kind of happy that it's not something completely ridiculous. I'm happy that
I wanted ridiculous. I really did.
I'm happy that it's staying fairly traditional. Yeah. And it's like, yes, we are giving you basically traditional controllers, albeit configurable controllers, and I'll be playing traditional games. There's nothing funky like, that image that came out from that patent filing where it was like, oh, no buttons on your controllers. Everything's going to be some sort of, wacky touch screen with, force feedback that replicates the feel of buttons or something bizarre like that. Although if I do have a concern, it's that as a portable system, it does not seem very portable to me.
No, I feel the same way. You're going to need a bag for this thing.
I mean, even with the 3DS, with the larger size 3DS, the XL, I mean, that barely fits in my pocket when it's folded in half. And this thing is, it's going to be much bigger than a folded in half 3DS. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has those analog sticks sticking out, so there's no way it's going to fit in your pocket. So, that's what I like doing with my 3DS. I like putting it in my back pocket and going out and street passing with people and playing games and then, coming back and playing some more games on it. So that's one of the reasons why I really hope it has a touchscreen is so at least if you don't want to have those controllers attached to it, and you can, shrink down the form factor a little bit, you'll still be able to play some types of games, touchscreen only games or something like that. You can still do whatever it has in lieu of Street Pass or an updated version of Street Pass and do things of that nature, as well as play, simple games that are based around touchscreen functionality. So at least, you can still get some fun out of it without having to take all these different parts with you. That is my hope.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say a sound investment is invest in what is that company that makes all the cases and stuff for game consoles. They're going to make a killing on selling little padded pouches to put these things in. I know Nintendo's probably already making them. Yeah, you're going to need a little bag for all the little bits and pieces this thing comes with.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that a back pocket is going to cut it. You're probably going to need a nice bag or a backpack.
Yeah, and all the little cartridges you're going to have to carry around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're going to need something good for those. Those things are looking pretty tiny.
Yeah, unless there's like a secret compartment in the back, I'm guessing you're going to need some sort of carrier for your games. So
yeah,
everything old is new again.
Well, speaking of the games, they showed a few. They showed a handful. The press release says that they are representative gameplay, but didn't 100% to commit to anything.
Of course.
But, we have a pretty good idea of what we're getting. Obviously, there is The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild.
Yep.
And did you see the new trailer for that that came
out
today?
No, I didn't.
It's okay. You didn't really miss anything.
Okay, what didn't I miss?
It was mostly just showing the same types of things that we'd seen before. Similar enemies, similar environments, flying through the air on the cloth, you know, going down the snow on your shield, climbing some crazy-looking giant mountains. It was a very nicely done trailer, but it was still mostly stuff we'd seen before. But obviously we know that's coming, and that's very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But now we got to see a new Super Mario game.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, probably the highlight of this Nintendo Switch teaser.
And wasn't it a couple weeks ago you were talking about a Mario game where there was a village, and then just in front of Mario there's this big, expansive town? Are you a wizard?
Well, I was talking about, you know, like a whole big city to explore or something. But yes, he is shown in this, you know, quick video clip of what sort of looks like a a village, a very colorful little town in the desert. It reminded me a lot of the aesthetics of Super Mario Sunshine. And there's like this little cactus dudes that are dancing mm-hmm. around, kind of like the plant people from Sunshine.
Yep.
We didn't see much, but we see him, you know, run through this orange desert in this little town, and that looks interesting and promising. And then we got to see that little castle scene where there are some platforms coming up and he narrowly avoids a bullet bill.
Mm-hmm.
And we really don't know much about the game, but it, you know, certainly is 3D Mario, and 3D Mario is usually pretty darn good. So I'd say that looks very promising.
Yeah, that looks great.
Yeah, that looks like a lot of fun. And then Mario Kart and Splatoon were both shown.
Yeah, so what do you think? Do you think they're just porting Mario Kart over and adding some features? It looked like, I mean, that track is from Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, that track is definitely, we've seen it before. But we saw King Boo on the track, and I believe he's new, yeah.
King Boo is a playable character, yeah.
And also there were two items that it showed. Well, you could have multiple items, which would also be a new feature. Yep. You know, last week we were talking about the games we wanted to see at launch, and I was like, oh, I'd kind of rather see a new racing series. I'd rather see Diddy Kong Racing or Donkey Kong Racing. Heck, I'd rather see F-Zero. I still want Mario Kart sometime, but I also admitted Mario Kart's a system seller, so I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that there. It is kind of looking like just an enhanced port. And that was another thing I said last week. I don't just want to be playing last gen's greatest hits on my brand new Nintendo system.
Yeah, I don't know if King Boo is enough to convince me to buy this game again.
Well, there'll probably be more than that. Hopefully there's more tracks.
The split screen, I think the split screen experience and being able to take that portable thing somewhere else and be able to hand somebody a controller and play Mario Kart 8, I think that may sell me on Mario Kart 8 a second time, but that's asking a lot, Nintendo. That's asking a lot.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'd rather have them hold off and deliver us a brand new Mario Kart experience when it's ready to go.
Yeah, and maybe they just used Mario Kart 8 because they had those assets, and they're making Mario Kart 9, and that's what we're going to get? Who knows?
Maybe. I mean, that's what, you know, that's why when I say Nintendo claims it's representative gameplay, it's like maybe we're not really just getting a port of Mario Kart 8 or a slightly enhanced version of Splatoon, because that's what this looked like, was pretty much the same as Splatoon, but then it's like, oh, the characters have different hairdos, mm-hmm. so it's clearly not the exact same game.
Yeah.
But it looks more like Splatoon, you know, 1.25 or something like that. So I would like to think that there is more than what we just saw, and there's going to be, you know, drastically enhanced new content for both of those. But, you know, who knows? It could really go either way at this point. And knowing how significant Splatoon and Mario Kart were for Wii U, I could see them wanting to get, you know, these titles out the door right away, even if there aren't completely brand new sequels ready to go. So we'll have to see on that one. And then on top of those, we saw what appears to be Skyrim Remastered.
Yeah, how do you feel about Skyrim?
Well, I own other systems. Mm-hmm. I own, you know, a PlayStation 4, and I had an Xbox 360. And if I cared about Skyrim, I would have already played Skyrim. So personally, it doesn't do a whole lot for me, but I think it's huge. I think this is monumental that they have a Western developer on board that will be, you know, bringing experiences like this to the Nintendo Switch. I think that's pretty darn impressive and important. Mm-hmm. What about you?
So I get motion sick playing games like Skyrim.
that's right.
So I'm not super excited. I would rather a 2D Metroid, but I don't think Skyrim Remastered is going to sell anybody on this system. But I think if you're of the certain age where your next system is this, you know, if you're a kid growing out of your 3DS and your parents get you a Switch, I think you'll probably get Skyrim if you're of a certain age, you know, 13, 14-year-old kid who hasn't played Skyrim because it's, you know, a 5-year-old game.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose having a brand new Elder Scrolls game would have been better.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a system seller, but it is a very promising sign. And it was also a promising sign seeing that NBA basketball game.
Yeah. Is it a 2K? What is it? 2K Sports?
It didn't say. There was no name attached to it during the credits at the end. It just said NBA. So it didn't acknowledge that it was 2K or EA or anything like that.
Okay.
It could be a first party game or done with another partner internal studio, or it could be from EA, and it's kind of crazy that EA is back on board, whether they're doing that game or not. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of a big deal. We don't know at this point, but again, that's something that Nintendo has not had in a while. So it shows that they are paying attention to broadening the audience and bringing in older players and delivering stuff that you weren't able to get on Wii U. And again, that is definitely a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of these developers aren't used to having their game be portable. So I think that's a really cool thing. It's going to broaden their market for sure. And
yeah, I suppose so.
And it lets them, depending on the technology they're using to bring their game over to the Switch, which I think it's Unity, you can pretty much make any game or port it through Unity and it will work on the Switch. So it lets them take a game they've already developed and just hopefully not make too many tweaks. And then, it just works on the Switch, which is really nice for developers. And I think that's going to help get support. It's going to take a little effort, but not as much as it would have if they had to learn some crazy Nintendo developer tool to get their game working on the system.
No, I wasn't aware that was how Unity worked. I thought it had to be developed in Unity from the ground up.
It does. It does, but Unity also supports C. So if your game is coded in C, you can port it. Again, porting is still very difficult, but if the code base is something Unity can work with, then odds are it won't be terribly difficult to port.
And supposedly this thing will be fully capable of running the Unreal Engine 4 as well.
Mm.
So that's certainly another big plus as far as getting parity with other systems goes.
Yeah, and I would hope that Bethesda would bring us a new title after launch once this thing gets some penetration in the market. And I would say that about people like From Software. We're probably going to get Bloodborne or something, or is that a Sony exclusive? No, no.
I forget. I'm confused about the whole series.
But Dark Souls or Bloodborne, we're probably going to get last year's or 2 years ago's game, and then hopefully the support will be there, and then we'll be on the new release cycle, which would be amazing. What are the I mean, that would just blow people's minds. Then the choice between, should I get it for the Xbox One, or should I get it for the Switch? Because, oh my gosh, with the Switch, it's actually really portable. When my wife goes over a friend's house, she takes a whole console and sticks it in a backpack with all this stuff. It's insane.
I do that when I visit my parents.
Yeah,
so.
Her Xbox One and PS4 look very road weary because they're super not portable and they're heavy and not meant to be disconnected and reconnected, multiple times in a day. But now the choice between, should I get the portable version or should I get the...
That's true.
I mean, you're going to probably want the portable version.
Yeah, yeah. That could be a big, big factor. But you brought up the developers, the publishers, the third parties. And yeah, there were a whole bunch of them announced. I guess I'll just kind of run down a partial list of those because it's a pretty pretty good list.
It is.
We got Activision, we got Arc System Works, Atlus, Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Capcom, Electronic Arts, as we mentioned, they're finally back in the Nintendo camp, apparently. From Software, Grasshopper Manufacture, Gung Ho, Intercreates, Koei Tecmo, Level 5, Marvelous, Platinum Games, Sega, Spike Chunsoft, Square Enix, Take-Two Interactive, Telltale Games, TT Games, formerly known as Traveler's Tales, mm-hmm. Ubisoft, and WB Games.
Oh, and you left off Konami.
Oh, I saw that name on there, but I didn't remember that they actually made games, so I wasn't sure who they were.
That's a burn. That is a hard, solid burn.
Presumably, they're only on there because they're going to like have virtual console stuff.
Okay. Oh, that's kind of stupid. Yeah, I don't see them.
I don't really see them doing any actual, you know, Metal Gear Zombie
Konami.
Games or anything. But yeah, it wasn't a complete list, but
So that's really promising. I mean, when you think about the best games from each of those companies, man, would it be fun to have them on a Nintendo console? I don't know if we're going to get their best game, but we can always hope.
Yeah, I definitely feel very confident in Japanese support. I'm pretty sure this is going to be where we're going to be getting, you know, our Monster Hunter games and things like that. And, you know, we were getting Sonic. We know we're going to be getting Dragon Quest, at least in Japan.
Well, hey, it's region free, apparently. So
yeah, that's right.
So as long as you can read Japanese, you're in good shape.
Yeah, that is really cool news. I hope there's going to be like a way to access, you know, the foreign e-shops if you want to.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I've always, you know, I want to be able to do on my Wii U. It's like, oh, here's some new obscure game that I would love to be able to download, but oh, I'd have to go out and buy a Japanese Wii U to do it.
Yeah, so. And I'm guessing now Language Select will be a popular option in some of these games just because mm-hmm. a publisher, you know, the media is going to be expensive. It's a lot easier to burn a disc than it is to create a piece of plastic that has, you know, a bunch of circuitry inside of it. So I hope that means, you know, the fact that it's region free means, oh, developers can take a chance on a title that, you know, might not necessarily work in every region, but hey, if it works in region X and Y, it's you know, great. Ship the stuff that was in region Z over to region X and Y and, you know, we're still profitable.
I hope so. Now, what did you think of the actual preview video itself? The fact that it seems like this was very North American made, North American focused. It seems to me like they were really taking a different marketing tack than they've taken
for sure.
With Wii U.
Yeah, this was not a candy colored, bubbly, you know, experience that we're used to with the Nintendo videos. If you didn't know it, that looked like a video made by an American company. It looked like an American console launch, and I think that the changes in the wind. I mean, the U.S. developers are making the games that are selling, you know, millions and millions of copies, and the Japanese market's always going to be the Japanese market, but you need to cater to the Western world, and that's to be profitable. It's a global market, and you can't just now focus on a tiny chain of islands in Asia, and you have to look at, you know, Europe, you have to look at South America, North America, you know, Eastern Europe.
Globally.
You have to completely be global. So the fact that it's region free, the fact that the video felt very Western for better or worse, it just feels like they're in the game again, no pun intended. You know, with the Wii U, we felt like, we weren't invited to the party with the Wii U. And now it feels like we're all invited to the party again with the Switch.
Yeah, I think that's all pretty fair to say. I mean, we got to see how it all pans out. It might just have been that the U.S. was behind this marketing effort. I wonder how well it's all going to play out. In the end, we've known that they said they want to recapture the kids market and sort of the whole configurable controller, the ability to put this in your backpack and take it over to a friend's house is something that's probably more kid friendly than adult friendly, although it does appeal to both. But yeah, just the way it was presented, you weren't seeing, you know, the happy white bread picket fence family playing together. Mm-hmm. You weren't seeing, you know, lots of little kids. You were seeing M-rated stuff like Skyrim. You were seeing sports games. You were seeing a focus on esports mm-hmm. in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really feels like, you know, at some level, definitely at some level, maybe not across the board, maybe not, you know, in every level, but they're definitely saying, yes, we need to make a change. We need to appeal more broadly and appeal to gamers. We can't just pretend that our system is only selling to, you know, the traditional nuclear family in the living room anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt that as a very positive thing that felt like they have learned, you know, their lessons one way or another. And again, we'll see how it all pans out in the end. But, you know, this was a very positive first step, I would say.
Yeah, just my gut initial reaction to that video was, what am I watching? What is this?
You thought it was Sony or Microsoft.
Yeah, it really just didn't feel like a Nintendo video. So now that I've had a chance to digest it and watch it a handful of times, it feels a lot better. But that, I got to tell you, that first watching that video felt super bizarre to me, even though I knew exactly, you know, almost exactly what this console was.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. There weren't a whole lot of surprises, but there is still a lot to be learned. We still have to learn all about its other features. We have to learn about its pricing. We have to learn about its launch lineup. We have to learn the exact date it's going to be coming out in March. I'm pretty certain that there's going to be more announced at the next investors briefing, which I think is just next week. But they've also said that there's going to be, you know, more to come sometime between now and the March launch. It might be next week, it might be 2 weeks from now, or it might be, you know, on March 1st. Who the heck really knows? But there certainly is a lot to still learn. Any further thoughts?
No, I just wanted to get just your gut feeling on what this thing is going to be priced at. Wild guess. Ooh. Or educated guess.
Boy, I hate making predictions and guesses, but I'm going to say $250.
Oh my God. What?
Well, they're saying there's going to be different configurations.
All right, different configurations.
They're implying there's going to be configurations.
I mean, shoot, they're
going to
sell.
So I'm saying there's going to be
a
$250 version. I think that will be the entry-level version.
Wow.
If I had to guess.
All right. I'm going with $399.
Hmm.
Not even kidding. I think $399. I think $350 is probably the lowest you're going to see this thing at. Remember the 3DS launched at a super high price.
Wasn't it also like $250?
I think it was
maybe more.
It was more. It was it was $250. It was $250.
Right, but I think they've also learned from that, and that's why I don't think that they would do something that's even more than that. So that's kind of why I'm hopeful that they'll have an entry-level model at that price.
It's just funny how much you can get out of that video just from seeing all this, you know, you're seeing seconds, mere seconds of these games, and you mm-hmm. know, just seeing all the details that you can pick up just in those very, very few moments with a game that may or may not even exist is just funny. You know, seeing the King Boo and the second slot for a power up and seeing, you know, Skyrim and seeing it was just funny being able to pick up on all those little details, all those things that on first watch you may not have noticed. So.
I admit, I watched it and, you know, paused it and sort of slow-mo'd it maybe a little more than I'd like to admit. But yeah, it's fun to pick out all those things in there. But so it's finally there. The NX is now the Switch. It'll be fun to find out the rest of the details. But for now, why don't we take an intermission, and when we come back, we will talk about some other news and game impressions. All right, we are back, and we are ready to talk about what else is going on in the world of Nintendo. But before we get into our latest impressions in the news, Scott, you want to give a little refresher about that contest we have going on?
Yep. All through October, we're just taking entries, and they're not really entries, they're tweets, for a backlit Game Boy, an original Game Boy that's been restored. That's right. It's been restored, and it's backlit, and I'll throw in a handful of Game Boy games to get you started. All you have to do is tweet at PowerProsPod and include in that tweet the hashtag Game Boy contest. We didn't want to make a retweet or follow type thing, so you don't have to follow us. You don't have to retweet a thing. Just tweet at us with the, at PowerProsPod. Anything, you can tweet us anything. Tweet us your biggest surprise out of the NX launch, what you're most excited for, what you think the price of the thing's going to be. Tweet that at us with the hashtag Game Boy Contest, all one word, and I'll put you on the list, and then I'll use our magic PowerPros random number generator to pick a winner.
Yeah, if you've already done it, then you're already good.
That's right. Don't do it twice, because my spreadsheet's getting out of control, and I will know if you've done it twice.
If you haven't done it yet, what are you waiting for?
Do it. And I'll ship that out at the end of the month, so we'll do one more, I think one or two more shows where we talk about it, and then I'll pick a winner.
Yeah. So as exciting as the Nintendo Switch is, it is not the only thing that's been going on this week. Just a couple days ago, released in the eShop for the 3DS, was the demo for Pokemon Sun and Moon, the upcoming mainline Pokemon game that comes out on November 18th. Scott, have you been playing this?
I haven't. I'm in the middle of a move, I just moved into a new house, so everything is in boxes, and the chargers got put in a box separate of the 3DS, and it was a whole big mess. So ultimately, I've found everything. I put everything in the same place, and now I just have to charge my toys and start playing with them, but I haven't played it yet. I'm not a huge Pokemon fan, so I will...
How can you not find time for Pokemon?
Oh, man. I just... I'm just of a certain age where Pokemon is not a priority.
Well, let me tell you. It is very Pokemon-y.
All right.
It's very, very Pokemon-y. You know, I feel like they've revealed so much about the game so far that it's kind of like, well, yep, this is Pokemon. It's kind of what I expected. A little bit like... the Switch, I suppose, only the Switch's case. That was all just leaked information, not stuff they'd put out there themselves. Yeah. But yep, it's Pokemon. It's in a tropical setting. It feels a little different, but still 85% very familiar. I guess that's a good thing. One new thing is you can spin around in a circle with the analog pad, and it will make your character start doing a little pirouette, which was kind of cute and funny. I don't think there's any point to it, but it's kind of funny. When you fight the boss, the totem Pokemon, he can summon in some extra guys to help, and so you're sort of in a handicap match. I know that's not new, but it was sort of a fun and interesting aspect to the battle. Although I ended up killing his minions so fast that I never really found myself in a handicap situation. The bad guys, Team Skull, are kind of funny. They're kind of goofy, and they've got this whole sort of, faux gang signs thing going on. It's almost as if non-Westerners were trying to write about some Western gang or something like that. The Z-moves were cool to see in person. Mm-hmm. They seem super powerful and fun.
They're not just a time-wasting, quick time event type thing.
Well, you just sort of watch it. You can only execute them once per battle.
Okay.
And in the demo, you only have the opportunity to do it in one quick battle, because you have Pikachu and he has the Z move, and you can do it in this one fight against a boss enemy. But then after that fight, you have to give Pikachu back. And also, that's also kind of the end of the demo now that I think about it. So if you don't do it right then and there, you don't really get a chance. A weird thing about the demo is that you start with Gray Ninja and you get Pikachu, but you don't get to choose your starter. You don't get to choose your character's gender. So all these things you normally associate with starting a brand new Pokemon game, you don't get to do in this game. You don't get to choose the fire cat or the owl or the seal. It just sort of throws you in there, and you know, you got a mysterious letter from someone, you have a Greninja, and you go on a short little adventure with you know, a new friend you've met on the island after going to the city hall with your mom. I will tell you something that you will not be happy about, Scott, and that is there was no 3D in the demo at all.
Oh, at all? Even in
no
the battle?
No stereoscopic 3D. I do not believe so. No
that
3D
just,
whatsoever.
Doesn't that mean that the full game will not also have the 3D?
I would assume that's what it means.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And I was really hoping they were going to go the opposite way. They'd be like, okay, we figured out the whole thing's in 3D now. But doesn't seem
that's
that
pretty
way.
Lackluster that they can't get the thing to run in 3D. That's kind of pathetic, actually. How many polygons are in those Pokemon? Come on.
You know, I'm checking the game's website right now, and it does have a note on it that says some areas also playable in 3D. But certainly, you know, judging by this demo, it's not a major factor in the game at all. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, the demo's out there. Everyone should go check it out. It's, like I said, it's very much what you expect from Pokemon, but it's good fun, and I am looking forward to the final game coming out next month.
All right.
And, Scott, even though it's not 3D, you know, give it a try. Maybe you'll like
maybe.
It.
Maybe. No, probably not.
Jeez. Okay, well, how about this one? How about Shantae and the Pirate's Curse? Have you played that
game? I have not. Have you played it?
Oh, of course. I played it.
Oh, a long time ago.
I played it when it came out 2 years ago. So you haven't even got it digitally through the eShop.
Have I played the Pirate's Curse? Yeah, I must have. I have it. I have it on my 3DS, yeah.
Well, I am glad to hear it because as far as I'm concerned, Shantae and the Pirate's Curse is a fantastic must-have 3DS game. And like I was saying, I got it years ago, but it just came out in physical form, courtesy of Rising Star Games, and so I decided to buy it all over again.
Oh, wow.
And
all right.
I started playing it, and I was like, man, this game is so good. It is so good. It is ridiculously good. It is one of the best-looking 2D games on 3DS. It's got some fantastic 3D effects, just all these multi-layered 3D effects. And they even put, you know, different layers of 3D on the characters that are in the cutscenes. They're just static drawings in the cutscenes, but they put varying levels of 3D on them. So, for example, the character's belly might be sticking out in your face a little bit more than the rest of him. Or Shantae's bosoms might be sticking out in your face a little bit more. It is a creative use of 3D and impressive as well. But besides that, it just plays great. It's incredibly smooth, has a great sense of humor. And of course, it is a Metroid style action adventure that has a lot of exploration and some, you know, sort of simple puzzles to figure out. And just exploring the different areas is a lot of fun. It's great. It is really, really good. Do you have the same kind of experience I did when you played it?
I didn't play it for nearly as long as you did, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. I just have, I don't know how I let it get off my radar, but it's installed on my 3DS. Have I played more than 2 hours of it? No. Did I get stuck?
Yeah.
Probably, maybe. I might have gotten stuck.
I played through the whole thing on its original downloadable form. But I haven't played it since then. So going back to it approximately 2 years later, I was sort of approaching it with fresh eyes, and I'm just having a blast all over again. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
And this version actually does have a slightly new additional feature that the original one did not. And that is in the form of what was essentially like a faux old school arcade game that you can play. It's just sitting there in the shop in the middle of Scuttletown, you know, the sort of Shantae's home base. And it's just this really simple game where you play as this monkey flying back and forth collecting coins. Certainly do not get this game just for this new feature, but it's kind of neat that it's in there.
And how much is but, is it like a $30, $40 game or how?
It's a $30 game, I believe. It is, you know, sort of full retail price. I think the original download version was only $20. So there is definitely an additional tax for getting a physical cartridge version. But if physical is your thing, if you like physical media like I do, mm-hmm. and like I know you do, then, you know, this is great. It is, again, fantastic game, fantastic way to play it. Slightly, ever so slightly enhanced. But if you haven't played it, go do it one way or the other. Totally.
Awesome. I hope WayForward's on board with the Switch.
Oh, I'm sure they will be. And of course, we've got the HD Shantae game, Half Genie Hero, still on the way to Wii U. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will be out before the end of this year. So yeah, this is also a great way to sort of prepare for the next chapter in the Shantae universe. So yep, there's also that to think about. That was not the only new game that came out recently that I got my hands on. I also played a download-only 3DS eShop exclusive called Chase, Cold Case Investigations, Distant Memories. That's quite a mouthful, isn't it?
That is a super long title. I don't... Who are they... What are they... What's with that title? I don't like it.
I don't really know what it is.
But it looks really good. This game looks really nice.
It looks really good. Yeah. It's from the former Sing guys. Those are the developers that made Trace Memory and Hotel Dusk. And has very similar character designs. And so it does look really cool. And it sounds like it's going to be really cool with some mysteries and some investigating and some crime. But let me tell you, Scott, I have not been so disappointed in a game in ages.
Oh, no.
I am not enjoying this thing. It's only $6, so it's not like I wasted a lot of money at least. But geez, this game is just super boring. You know, I do like these mysteries. I like this kind of stuff on DS. I like so-called visual novels. But like everything that Ace Attorney does right, this game does totally wrong. The characters, they're not very interesting. Almost the whole thing is just set in this dinky little office that feels like a prison cell, and it's just, you know, your main character and your assistant, and they just sort of, you know, banter a little bit. But it's nothing terribly interesting. You're investigating crime scenes just by looking at these poorly drawn little photos. They aren't 3D or anything like that. Again, there's no 3D in this game either. But you just move a cursor around. There's only a couple things to investigate. And then a couple of questions pop up, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't think I ever even got a single question wrong, so if there's any penalty for getting them wrong or not, I'm not even sure about, but there's, like, very little interactivity.
Is it like one of these, like, no how drama. Close are you paying attention type things?
A little bit, I guess, but there aren't, you know, there's not a whole lot of interactivity, like I said, so these questions only pop up once in a while, and, yeah, it just feels like the dullest way to do a game of this type. Like, if you took out all the cool puzzles and items and interesting characters in Hotel Dusk and made it only, like, an hour and a half long, this is what this game would be, I suppose. Plus, it ends on this cliffhanger. Like, this is the first chapter in some episodic series, but so far as I can tell, there is no evidence that there's a second chapter in the works yet, or that it really is turning into a series. So if I haven't completely destroyed your interest in it, you can go to the website. You can go to accessgames.com. Uh-huh. You can read this. They have this section on the game that's called Short Stories. And reading that is very similar to actually playing the game. It might even be more interesting than playing the game. But if you like just reading up about these characters' backstories and finding out how they met up, then perhaps you'll be interested in playing the whole game. But otherwise, I would just say skip this thing. There are much better mystery adventures out there. Go play Ace Attorney or something else like that. But yeah, this was a letdown for me, I'm sorry to say. But on the other hand, you've been playing a game that's probably a bit more enjoyable than that. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that is correct. I downloaded Severed for the 3DS. It is a cross-buy, so that means if you buy on either Wii U or 3DS, you can install it on your other system, so which is nice. You pay once. Mm-hmm. I think it was
$15,
which is a little steep, but, you know, for what feels like a pretty full game, that's not bad.
So what's the gameplay like? I've been seeing pictures of this for a long time, and I've loved the art style, and it seemed like it's touch-centric, but I wasn't super-duper sure, because I've still never actually played it
myself. It is super touch-centric. It's It's like a mazy style game. You're walking basically through hallways and then encountering enemies, and each of them has a what amounts to a timer that at which point when the timer runs out, they're going to attack you. It's really managing attacking multiple enemies at once that gets, you know, is where the fun is, where you're parrying a hit from one guy and then you have to quickly turn around and slice at another guy before he can strike at you. Because if you strike at them, their time to hit you gets reset. So I know it sounds very confusing. Once you play it, it'll make sense. They all have a...
I'm a little confused.
Yeah, they all have a very specific defensive maneuver, and you're trying to slash through those defensive maneuvers in order to kill them.
So it's a little bit of pattern recognition, I guess?
It is. Very pattern recognition. It's also very... You're being very active with a stylus, so it can get a little tiring, actually. And I'm not even, you know, not just physically, but mentally, because you're constantly being beset by enemies. Now, the nice thing is once you defeat an enemy, they don't reappear in the same spot. So it's not like you're going to constantly be encountering enemies once you... you know, dispatch with them and you go back to the same location, they won't be there. There are puzzles to solve. I've only gotten through, I think, two of the towers. I've gotten stuck already.
How many towers are there?
I think there's five or six different areas. Okay. And I've encountered, I think, five or six different enemy types so far, maybe six or seven. When you defeat an enemy, you power up by slicing off parts of their anatomy, collecting those parts, and then using those parts to level up, basically. So certain combinations of limbs and arms and heart pieces will give you better armor or a better powerful slice kind of thing. So it is fun. But it's not for everyone. I wish there were a demo. I don't think there is one just yet. So I would recommend it. But if you don't like games, like it feels a lot like I hate to say it. It feels a lot like a Mike Tyson's Punch Out kind of thing, where you're just slicing, and not, for better or worse, slicing at the character in a certain combination, and then defeating them, and then the next one comes up. I've gotten stuck already, so that's not very good. And the fact that I was looking at a walkthrough when I put it down last is not a good thing. Also, the areas look kind of samey. The design is really nice, but it all feels very samey. So it's hard to get your bearings. There is a map, and you can't do it without the map because, again, every hallway looks the same. So that's kind of a ding against it, where you can't really do this without looking at the map. That said, it's very enjoyable, and I definitely am going to pick it back up as soon as I figure out where to go next.
So if you were reviewing this on a Nintendo Power scale, would you give it a recommended, a or a grumble grumble?
I will give it a recommended for sure. It's really nice looking. It has a very similar style to Guacamelee, another game that
same developer.
From the same developer. Mm-hmm. Your character is a female protagonist. She's pretty awesome, but you never see her except in a mirror in the beginning. So
I think I've seen that screenshot.
It's good. I like the style. The colors are really vibrant and interesting, and the 3D is a little half-assed because the environments amount to just a flat image pasted inside of a sphere, and then certain elements in the foreground will be in 3D. So it's not true 3D, unfortunately, but for what it is, I'll give it I'll say it's okay.
Well, I'm intrigued. I would like to check it out sometime. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's neat.
All right. Well, why don't we move on from the game impressions into some news? Specifically, I wanted to make mention that the semi-long-awaited book from Dark Horse, The Art of Fire Emblem Awakening, is finally out. It's finally available, and if you are a fan of that franchise, or you know someone who's a fan of that franchise, or heck, even if you're not a fan of that franchise, you can go out, pick it up, add it to your collection. I got my hands on it, and I am pretty impressed with this book. It's a nice large size. It's, you know, bigger than your average sized book for sure. Very high quality paper, and so it's got, you know, these really big, nice, lush looking images. It has production art. It has lots of concept art. It has, you know, the cutscenes, you know, showing, like, you know, directions about how the cutscenes are going to flow and things like that. You know, in the game, you mostly saw, like, the characters' heads and their upper bodies, so you didn't really get to see the full character design a lot of the time. So some of the times I'm seeing these pieces of art, and it's like, wow, a lot of this stuff feels really new because I, you know, really didn't get to see this character, you know, below the waist or something like that. Plus, on top of all this artwork, it has all the ending variations and all of the dialogue from your support conversations. And if you're like me, where you went through and were trying to match up different characters just to see what their conversations were like, and they're like, okay, well, which one am I going to marry? Which one has the best conversation?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you did that, you're not going to see everything. And so it's really nice to have this book where every single conversation variation, you know, because you can match up different characters, and then the new characters you get have, you know, different parents. And so then they have different conversations depending on whether that character is a parent or not, and so on and so forth. Anyway, it's all there in this book. The text on some of that stuff is really tiny because they have a lot to cram in there. You might have to get out a magnifying glass to read it all, but it's still really cool that it's all in there. And I'm very impressed by this package. The retail price on this is like $40, which is, you know, the same as the game cost, which is kind of silly when you think about it. But I picked it up on Amazon for like $23. So if you're a Fire Emblem Awakening fan, I would say this is definitely recommended.
Cool. Is it hardcover?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Hardcover. Like I said, sort of oversized and very nicely done. So that is pretty darn cool. Moving on from that to our favorite news topic, Amiibo.
Amiibo!
It turns out that the hard-to-obtain Palutena Amiibo is going to be available once again at Toys R Us starting next week on October 27th.
So that's a store exclusive?
Well, originally it was an Amazon exclusive, and now it appears to be coming back exclusively to Toys R Us stores. You can get it online, and the last time I checked, it was still available through their website. And they're also going to get restocks on a bunch of other Amiibo. Pit, Ness, Samus, Sonic, and Gold Mario are all coming back to Toys R Us next week on the 27th.
My only complaint with that, not that I mean collecting Amiibo, but Toys R Us's are harder and harder to come by these days, aren't they? Like, where is your nearest Toys R Us?
Oh, well, the closest one to me is like, I don't know, 10 miles away, maybe?
There's
another one
bad.
Just like another 4 miles past us. There's two of them fairly accessible to me.
Okay.
However, most of these Amiibo were just re-released at Best Buy like last week, I think. I stopped into Best Buy a couple days ago, and all these guys were there. Pit, Ness, Gold Mario, Samus, Sonic, Mega Man as well, and Lucina. And the restock is real. They had tons of Lucinas. I'd never seen a Lucina before in North America in my life. And so it's like, oh my gosh, look at all these Lucinas. This is insane. I would have taken a picture, except people were giving me really funny stares as my jaw dropped to the floor. So I didn't take a picture, but...
Are there any Amiibo out there that you've doubled up on, either accidentally or on purpose?
Accidentally, yes. There are a couple. I might have a second Ness lying around.
Well, that's not a bad one to have, too.
No, there's not. I ended up with one North American and one Japanese, because that was the way that was so hard to get, that the only way I could get Robin and Lucina was to buy a set of the Japanese ones. And so that's how I ended up with a extra Ness. Because that one, you know, I stood in line for, but, you know, I was only the third person in line, but they were still sold out by the time I got to the front. So I couldn't get Lucina or Robin, but I could get Ness. I'm like, okay, well, I'll get Ness. And anyway, yeah, so I ended up with two of them. I also ended up with two Pac-Mans, but as you know, I ended up giving that Pac-Man away as a Christmas gift at work.
That's right. I remember that.
Did you end up with that?
No, I did. You know, I selected it, and then somebody wanted it so badly, I was like, you're killing me here. Have this. That was that was one of those holiday grab bag things. Do you have any idea of whether these retailers are allowing people to purchase multiples of these things? Are there resellers out there that are kind of...
The resellers are done.
Oh, are they?
Like I said, when I went into the store, they had tons of these things.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure, you know, that bubble was burst. People who are buying these things just to resell them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're really doing that anymore. The only one that... you know, they had a very low supply of was Gold Mario. But again, this was only at Best Buy. If the Toys R Us gets all these in as well, then, you know, these things will be, you know, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it's a great opportunity to get some of these characters that were so hard to find before. You know, I'd never seen Pit in a store before either. I had mm-hmm. never seen Ness in a store. I'd never seen Gold Mario in the
yeah.
store. I had seen Mega Man, Samus, and Sonic, but not some of the others. So, yeah, it's cool that these are continuing to get out there, even though the, you know, Amiibo bubble has burst. You know, if you were not a speculator and you're just a fan who wants to get these things,
yeah.
it's awesome yeah, that yeah. you have another chance.
That's great.
Another bit of interesting news comes from over in Japan. Some news about Sega 3D Classics Collection 3. Now, we've talked about this one before, and we even had a little discussion about the new games that we wanted to see add to the collection, because there were reportedly four new 3D enhanced titles in addition to stuff that had already been available through the eShop,
mm-hmm.
which included Sonic 2, Streets of Rage 2, Gunstar Heroes, Super Hang-On, and some other stuff I don't remember right now. Anyway, this was actually came out, you know, probably a couple weeks ago, but we never talked about it before. But I did want to mention they announced what the other three games are that are included in the collection that had never been released prior. Those being Thunder Force 3, Alien Syndrome, and Columns.
Hmm.
Your thoughts?
The only one I would be interested in is Thunder Force 3. Alien Syndrome's kind of like a top-down shooter, is that right?
Yeah.
And then Columns yeah. is like a Tetris clone-ish.
It's like a very boring Tetris-type game.
I don't think Columns in 3D is going to get me really that excited.
I'm so disappointed.
Thunder Force 3, I think in 3D would be kind of pretty cool. But
yeah.
Alien Syndrome, I never really played Alien Syndrome on the Genesis, so did you?
Well, I don't think there was no Genesis version that I can remember. I think this must
just
be
arcade?
A port of the arcade game.
And was it on yeah. the TurboGrafx? What?
Well, there was definitely there was an NES version, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Unlicensed. Or it wasn't licensed by Nintendo. It was licensed, you know, by Sega,
okay.
and it was published by Tengen. And so there was an NES version of Alien Syndrome. But I never really played the game that much because, you know, it was, you know, an unlicensed NES game. I wasn't going to buy that. I didn't have a Master System. I didn't really play it in the arcades. So yeah, I'm not exactly a big Alien Syndrome fan either. I've, you know, heard some good things about, but it's never one that's really caught my attention. Maybe if I get this, I'm going to give it another try. But otherwise, I completely agree with you. Thunder Force 3 was a pretty awesome game back in the day. It was one of the best shooters that was on the Genesis. And it's not even developed or published by Sega originally, so it's really strange that it's on. I guess Sega announced that they got like all of Technosoft's old catalog,
mm-hmm.
so they can bring back a lot of those games if there's anything that, you know, appealed to people outside of Thunder Force. But Columns is such a waste of space.
Oh,
I
no.
mean, like you said,
yeah,
boring,
I think you could
simple...
even play. Columns may even be on Virtual Console right now. I think it might. I had it on the Game Gear.
Well, there was this running joke I had. Like 10 years ago, back during the GameCube and, you know, GBA days, where I was, like, under the impression that every single game that Sega put out, somewhere hidden in it was Columns. It seemed like everything they put out ended up with Columns in it, one way or the other.
It's just so ugly.
Ugly isn't what strikes me about it. Just boring and simple. And really no need for 3D. The fact that we got that and we did not get Golden Axe, so disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the games we talked about when we were, you know, talking about the ones we wanted to see, they were really, you know, pie in the sky. You know, I really wish this would happen, you know, Moonwalker things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we didn't get Moonwalker.
Nope.
I didn't expect we'd get Moonwalker. But Golden Axe is such a classic Sega game. The fact that it did not get into any of these 3D compilations just feels so wrong.
Yeah. Yep.
And now that ship has sailed, because this is, you know, supposed to be the last one the final 3D collection. No more after this.
And this is Japan only still, right? We're not...
So far, it is only Japan. That is correct. And they are also getting a 3D Classics triple pack that includes all three of the retail releases. So it has every single of these 3D games that was released in the eShop, and then each, you know, cartridge has, you know, like four or five brand new 3D enhanced games. So there's lots of great stuff. And you know, between the three of them, it's, you know, sort of almost a, you know, who's who of classic Sega games. Mm-hmm. As I said, with some notable exceptions. You know, it still could come out in the US. We could still get this third installment, and we could still get the triple pack. Not going to hold my breath on it, but if it did, it'd be cool. I'd like it. I'd buy it.
Yeah, I'd buy the heck out of it. What are they, $40 a piece? So I can't imagine that triple pack's going to be over $100, right? There's no way.
Nah. In Japan, it's about $50 just for volume 3, and then it's around $90 for the triple pack. But I imagine it would have to be a lot lower than that if they decided to release it in the U.S.
Yeah, I'd get that.
But yeah, I do wish that there had been more titles that were up my alley in the Sega 3D Classics Collection 3. Kind of a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's certainly been an eventful week in the world of Nintendo. I can still scarcely believe that the NX has finally been unveiled as the Nintendo Switch. But I do think it is time to finally wrap up this episode of the Power Pros podcast. Before we go, of course, we do still have time for a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the NES game Chubby Cherub. A game where you'll chomp and chase all day. Chubby Cherub is a chivalrous little angel whose life is far from trouble-free. He gets bitten by dogs and pecked at by birds. Firecrackers are thrown at him, and smoke puffs cover him from head to toe. And all because he wants to help people and get some food to eat. Your skills can get Chubby Cherub out of trouble. In this fun-filled, fast-paced game pack, you and Chubby Cherub can go on endless adventures. And with you at the controls, Chubby Cherub can rescue his friend, perform his deeds, and make the day a cheerful one.
Wow, that definitely has not sold me on Chubby Cherub. I never played this game.
I never did either, but I remember seeing the pictures of it like way, way back in the day, like mm-hmm. in the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this game looks terrible. And like any time that me or my friends wanted to, like, you know, give an example of a terrible game, we would always bring up Chubby Cherub, even though, in fairness, we never actually played it. But the box art and that back of the box copy wasn't exactly selling me on it.
No,
I have to admit.
Well, in Japan, it was called Kyutaro the Ghost Bow Wow Panic, which is basically like there's a ghost and he's being chased by dogs, and then that doesn't make sense in America, and maybe they were trying to stay away from ghost type stuff, so they turn him into an angel. That's ridiculous.
I admit the Japanese title doesn't quite roll off the tongue as well as Chubby Cherub does, so maybe they did localize it in a good way after all.
The Bow Wow Panic sounds like a stock market crash.
Or possibly a rap song. Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
# Game Boy Contest,
and our evil overlord, Kefka, we will see you next time.